Well, for this evening, if you're a regular here to King's Arms, you'll know that we just started a series looking at identity. And tonight, it's a real delight to have both Matt and Kirsty Cook speaking. So it's two for the price of one this evening. For those of you who don't know them, they are real pillars of the church here. They faithfully led a small group over a number of years and now are coaching other small groups. And they have both a real wisdom and a teaching gift. And in the middle of their busy schedule, they found time to research and prepare for this evening. So I wonder, can we be really attentive, but mostly just give them a really warm welcome as they come up to speak? Is that all right? Let's welcome these guys up.
Is this going to work? Is this okay working tonight? Okay. Great. Had a bit of trouble this morning. Oh. Is it going to be fine? Okay, that's good. I'm just going to slip this CD of Drew's just down here to take home later. Well, it's lovely to see you back, Drew. My kids love Drew's worship music, so it's great to have him here. Okay, we're continuing our... Am I going to be okay? Yep. We're continuing our journey together today, looking at identity, who we are in God. And tonight we're taking the subject of being a new creation. And I'm ready for something new, actually, because earlier this week my in-laws peered at my head and said, "Kirsty, your hair's turning grey." And I was at my son's sports day on Tuesday. I'm pleased to say I won the mum's race, but my legs are still a bit sore. So clearly parts of me are past their best. Our in-laws are babysitting tonight, so we must bless them, must honour them. As PJ said, Matt and I are sharing preaching tonight. You'll be pleased to know that seeing as we're married, mostly things that we share work out pretty well, apart from our DIY exploits, which are pretty disastrous. And in fact, we generally employ Evan or Rob Campbell to do jobs for us now so that our marriage stays healthy. So I'm going to briefly look at what it is to be a new creation and why it's necessary, and then Matt is bravely going to tackle why we still sin and how to take hold of what God has given us. Some of you may know that I work part-time for the probation service. I'm not at home looking after my kids. And a few years ago, I had a young lad come to me from the youth offending service. He was just 18. And he came along with his key worker and for a handover. And she spent about half an hour with me and with this young lad, we'll call him Michael, in the room with me, telling me what a disappointment Michael had been over the last few years. And she was telling me how he had generally failed at everything they had set him, how he was disruptive, how none of her colleagues enjoyed supervising him, and how he really had made a mess of pretty much everything that they had put before him. When she left and Michael and I were alone, I asked him, "Michael, what is there that is good about you? What are you proud of?" And he said, "You know, there is nothing good about me. Everything I do, I mess up." And you know, at that point, my heart broke for this poor lad, because I realized that his identity had got wrapped up in what people had said about him. And he was a young man whose life was ruined because he felt a failure. He felt like there was no value over him, and he had no positive feelings about his future. When we rely on the world for our identity, we're incredibly vulnerable. We're on shaky ground when we let our roles, what we do, define who we are, because other people judge us by their own standards, and we never really know where we stand and if we're going to hit the mark. When it comes to roles, I am the multi-purpose vehicle of the century. In any one day, I can be a wife, a mother, a probation officer, a counsellor, a teacher, a negotiator, a taxi driver, a caterer, a hairdresser, a bike mechanic, an engineer. You name it, I can do it. If I allowed my successes and failures, at all these facets of my life, to define who I was, I'd be a nervous wreck by 9 o'clock every day. People are prepared to spend a lot of time and money on trying to find out who they are. Identity is big business. It's important to us. There are any number of self-help books out there. If you Google identity crisis, you'll make 9,500,000 hits, which is enough, I think, to give you a crisis there and then. But I've got good news for you today. You won't need to spend money, You don't need plastic surgery. You don't need to grow your hair long and go on a soul-searching trip through the Amazon rainforest. We've got the answer right here in God's word. All we need to know about our identity, all we need to know from the one who created us, who knitted us together in our mother's womb, who has plans and purposes to prosper us, who has loved us from the very beginning of time. Today we're going right to the centre of God's message as to what it is to be a new creation. So how do we become a new creation and why is it necessary? We're just going to take one verse to springboard out of from 2 Corinthians 5:17. We haven't got an overhead, I'm afraid. Paul is writing to the church in Corinth, and this verse is in a section where he's talking about us being reconciled with God through Jesus, about being regenerated to become a new creation. The verse reads, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone and the new has come." So what's Paul saying here? He's saying that for those of us who have become Christians, something has changed. Paul is describing the old going and a new coming. So if we want to grasp the weight of the new, we also need to know the old. So how did we start off before we were Christians? Well, God made us, he delights in us, and he wants relationship with us. But the Bible also says God is righteous, he is just, and therefore he hates sin. Now, we all carry shameful and sinful things around with us. And however hard we try to do the right thing and clean up our act, it won't be enough. And it can't be, because without God's Spirit, we can never clean up our lives enough. We're powerless to overcome the sin which is inside us. And this leaves us with a problem, because there is no way that we can approach God and have a relationship with him, because he is good and holy and we are not. We were on a holiday a couple of weeks ago in the lakes, and unsurprisingly there was a wet day. And whilst we were deciding what to do, our children, who are 5, 3 and 1, had disappeared off upstairs to play a game. And after a while, we realised that there was an ominous silence. And as a parent, that is worrying. So I decided that it was time to investigate. And I went upstairs into one of the bedrooms to find our eldest son sitting on the floor, surrounded by a pile of ripped pages and a very sorry-looking Bible next to him. It transpired that he had wanted to make his own storybook and had used my Bible for the raw materials. I clearly couldn't hide the horror that spread across my face. And without saying anything, he instantly burst into tears. And the first thing he said was, "I'm really sorry, Mum, I didn't mean to do it." He was shocked by his own behaviour. Once he started ripping, he knew he shouldn't have been carrying on, but he just couldn't help himself. That's what it's like not being able to master the sin in our own lives. It's no good looking around, seeing other people and thinking, "Oh, that's a nice person, I'll just try and copy their behaviour and be like them." It doesn't work like that. We all make mistakes all of the time. We just can't try harder to fix it. We need something to actually change, as opposed to something just getting better. Whilst we are what the Bible describes as being dead to the ways of God in Romans 8, our sinful nature is our master. It is controlling us. Whilst we're living independent to God, we will be placing our needs for security and self-worth and significance somewhere other than him. Many of the people who I work with, the offenders, this is not my colleagues, have serious drug addictions, spending up to £300 a day to fund their habits. I went in to see one guy in prison a few weeks ago who I know, and he was telling me how he'd been in care since he was 18 months old because his parents had neglected him. He doesn't even know his birthday. He has never felt loved, never felt as if he belongs, always been lonely. He is insecure, he is fearful and depressed. And he hides in a world of waking up, committing crime, going and buying drugs, using drugs, being in a semi-comatose state, till he wakes up again and his day starts all over. He's trapped without God in his life, and he cannot get out of that cycle. What's the point? Living without God in the old, we didn't have a choice but to live subject to our sin. We would have made willful decisions to try and improve things for ourselves sometimes. But the emphasis there is always on trying, and we never know if we've tried hard enough. The bottom line is, we can't change fundamentally who we are. However, when we become a Christian and we accept Jesus into our lives, a radical change happens. He puts a new spirit in us, his spirit. He makes us what the Bible describes in Romans 6:11 as being dead to sin but alive to Christ. Last week, Matt and I were having a little discussion about how some things were going between us, and as usual, he was getting a bit of a hard time from me. Not only does he have a highly demanding job, but when he comes home, I expect him to be full of energy for me and the kids, to have plenty of time to do all the little jobs around the house that need doing that Rob hasn't had time to do for us, to not need any leisure time of his own, and to have lots of energy and capacity to pamper me as and when I want it. Now, I probably sound like quite a demanding wife, and I'll let him back me up on that or not, but I think this is a bad day for me. However, in an effort to defend himself in this conversation, Matt struck back with the line, "Look, I'm only human." Now, at the time, the comment brought a humorous end to our argument, to our discussion. But actually, on reflection, I thought, you know, that's not true. We aren't only human. We have God's Spirit living inside us. He has made us new on the inside, and that makes all the difference. The significance of this verse in Romans is huge. Whereas we have described a life dominated by the power of sin, Paul tells us that in Christ, that power over us has gone. It is dead and buried. It is no longer in control, and instead, we have been made alive to God's redeeming spirit. Thus, the old has gone and the new has come. This isn't an additional extra we get when we become a Christian. It's a complete change. When we become a new creation, love becomes the controlling motive instead of hatred. Serving Jesus is our primary goal rather than serving ourselves. Our hearts long to be filled with humility rather than pride, and we acquire a true understanding of who we are rather than spiritual blindness. For those of us here who know Jesus today, this is who we are now, today, in God. This exchange happened when we gave our lives to him. It is not an ongoing process. We cannot contribute to it. We can't change it. God has replaced our old way of being controlled by sin to a new way where his spirit lives in us, and that is what we submit to. The point is, church, finding freedom from sin and having a liberty to serve Jesus and to serve others comes from living out who we already are in Christ. We are a new creation. We are no longer slaves to sin, but we are living with the all-conquering spirit of Jesus in us. Matty?
Okay. Sorry, this is the trouble when you're doing tag team preaching, but at least I'm not wearing Lycra. Okay, that's a relief for everyone. Kirsty, myself, PJ, everyone at the front, and even those at the back. So what do we get from this? What do we get? Let's try and focus off me wearing Lycra. Let's try and focus. What do we get from this? We get from this that if you are a Christian here tonight, you are a new creation. You are a new creation. Why? Because God declares you so. God has regenerated you. He has put his spirit in you and he has made you something else. You're not your old self having to try harder, having to try to be a Christian. He has totally transformed you from the inside. That's what's happened. Just think about it in your mind. Here we are, all very English, sitting in our rows, looking, thinking, oh, that's great, Matt. You know, But that is absolutely fine. It's miraculous, isn't it? Yeah. Is that good news?
Yeah.
That's good news. That's good news. So what I want to talk to you about for a few moments now is, what is it like to walk out as a new creation? What's it like to walk out with God as a new creation? Doesn't mean to say that God doesn't have to do something else. He doesn't have to create us again. He doesn't have to make us a new creation again. But we do walk out with him as a new creation. You know, I've had lots of struggles in life, not with Lycra, but I've had lots of struggles with life and with sin, particularly sin which has become habitual. And I guess at school there was a lot of sort of problems which were implanted then, things that shouldn't have been, things very much from the world. And if we took something like sport, well, I would be the kid who stood there at the end, the last person to be picked for a team game. There I would stand, everyone would be picked, and then you pick the goalkeeper, and then you pick me. And Matt would go in defence, or could he have a position on the sideline? Or could he read a book instead? And you know, the thing is with that sort of thing, and well, athletics, just let me tell you about athletics. Athletics would have a javelin in hand. You'd line us up all on the edge of the playing field, so we playground, so we were throwing into the playing field. And the sports teacher was fearful for the lives of others all around me as I threw it and nearly took my ear off. Or if I had the discus, we were worried about the windows somewhere over there. So I was absolutely terrible at sport. But you know, for a young bloke of about, I was about 12 when it started really to dawn on me, it's such a fundamental thing. Actually, if you're not good at sport as a bloke, you're not part of that crowd. You're not part of that crowd of guys who are cool. And I wasn't part of that group of guys that was cool. And when I left school, I went to work on a farm. And I got much fitter by virtue of the fact that working on the farm is pretty hard work. And I started running around the woods and I thought, hey, I can do this. And actually, when I'd lost weight, I wasn't too bad at it. And then I could compete and actually found that I was very good. But you know, the trouble with that is that actually I started to become addicted to sport. And you think that's a bit of a side sort of thing. It's as easy. It's not. It's as addictive as it might be in going down the pub and having one too many drinks. It's as addictive as cigarettes. It really is an addictive thing. And it's taken me over. And my identity became rooted in the fact that I was an endurance sportsman. And I ended up at triathlon. Because, you know, if you're good at riding your bike, you're good at swimming, you're good at running, you've got nowhere else to go except spending time with a variety of people who do nothing ostensibly apart from sport. Now, I was a Christian at the time, and you know what? I was living in poverty. I was living in poverty. I was living in the bin of life. There was nothing else to me. I woke up one Saturday, it was really raining, it was 1 November, it was raining, it was cold, there was no way I could do anything, no sport, and you know, I had nothing else, I developed no other interests, or my relationships were with sport, and it was toxic, and my desire to overcome some of the issues that I'd had in my life had actually become sinful. They'd actually become habitual. Habitual sin had got deeply rooted in my life. And the question which I have is, I say, fine, Kirsty, that's very good. That's great. We're regenerated. We can just step on the fact that I'm a new creation. But why? Why did that happen to me? Why do I still sin when I'm a new creation? And that's fundamental, because I think that stops us moving forward on this issue. Well, the simple answer is this. When we are regenerated by God, he puts his spirit in us and we become a new creation. This breaks our relationship with sin, but it does not break the existence of sin. Just let me say that one more time. When we're regenerated, when we become a new creation, this breaks our relationship with sin. It does not break the existence of sin. Sin no longer has the hold over us that it did. But it is still in the world and a very real temptation for us. But what we must realise is that there is not some tug of war going on inside us between the old and the new. This is simply not possible because the Bible says the old has gone. We're not in the process of trying to put to death old habits. I don't need more of God to regenerate me and make me a new creation. Rather, the power that sin had over us has already died, and we cannot make it any more dead. Let me press into this. Let me press into this further. You see, the main point here is that as a new creation, I have a choice. New creations have a choice when it comes to sin. Whereas in my former state, before I was a new creation, I didn't have a choice. Like little Tristan. He couldn't help himself, but once he'd started ripping the Bible, ripping was good, and he just kept going. But when faced with sin as a new creation, you have a choice. That miracle is complete. And I guess I've learnt that when faced with the sin in my life about sport or about other things, that it's more useful to start from a place of realising the battle has already been won. The battle has already been done. It's all been done. The power of sin is broken. And I guess it's walking out in that place, walking out in that victory that God had for us. I was in a house group with Paul Plagerson. Some of you may know Paul. Paul's a Messianic Jew. Now, I wanted to know about the Old Testament, and I thought that'd be a good small group to join, and because of Paul's background. And he said to me once that, you know, Matt, we can talk about sin, and we can talk about the problems with sin, but you know what? If you were cut in half, you'd be just like a stick of rock. You would read right the way through the middle, saved and purified. Saved and purified. So while we may sin, while we may struggle with sin, fundamentally God sees us as saved and purified. That battle has already been won. But actually, practically, here and now, we've spent a lifetime building up habits that are not just going to stop tempting us. That's the reality of it. Ways of thinking and dealing with people that we've spent years perfecting in order to maximise our comfort, and I'm very good at that. And they're just not going to disappear. But the difference now is that we have a choice. The difference now is that we have a choice. We're no longer powerless against sin as we were before we knew Christ. We are a new creation with God's Spirit living in us. And he has done everything to enable us to live a holy and blameless life. You know, having got fit following school, I think I lost about 2 stones. And I started climbing up mountains. I really enjoyed doing that. I absolutely loved getting to the top. And when I was younger, it was all about climbing some of the highest mountains I could get hold of. And I remember one day in Wales when I was a bit younger and dumber. Pretty dumb now, but it's all relative, isn't it? And I remember one day setting off to climb a mountain in kit like this. Like this. You know, it'd be all right, wouldn't it? 20 degrees. 20 degrees in the valley. Climbing up the mountain, when I arrived at the summit, things were okay. So we sort of got about 10 degrees, because you use degrees as you go up, as many of you may know. Just in my t-shirt. Then what happens? The cloud came in. The temperature dropped. It started to sleet and get dark early. I didn't have the right kit with me. I had no options. No choices available. I couldn't make a choice. I had nothing. I had no options. But now when I set off as an experienced mountaineer and climber, I take kit with me. And if the weather comes in, I have options. I have a choice. And this is what it is like to live as a new creation. I have choices, whereas I didn't before. You see, when we become a little example here, when I became a new creation, God gave me some resources. Some resources which meant that I could make a choice. Equivalent to having like a rucksack on your back. Things you can pull out. The things you can pull out, know what they are? Gifts of the Spirit. God implants his Spirit in you. Here they are. So when the weather now, as a new creation, sets in, when I feel that sin is tempting me, I have a choice. I can either carry on like this, or I can put my burglar's jacket on. Or rather, I can draw upon fruits of the Spirit. There you are, you see. Or I can keep dry. And I can carry on. You see, we have choices as a new creation, whereas we didn't before. I can either continue with my old thoughts and satisfy my old desires, or I can call on the fruits of the Spirit, which give me the power to be, for example, patient and kind with my children when they're absolutely making me mad. I'm ripping up the Bible. Importantly, this is not about trying harder. This is not about trying harder. It's not something learnt, like go up a mountain, so the metaphor runs out, the analogy runs out. It's not something that you have to learn. It's something which God gives you. God has given you this. You do not have to try harder. It's about drawing on what God has done for you, what he has already done for you. You don't need more of God on this, but you may need more of God to prompt you to draw on the resources that he has already given you. You do not need more resources from God. You need him to maybe prompt you to draw upon what he's already done, living out in it. And when I'm tempted to lie at work and cover up a mistake, for example, because I'm fearful of how it may make me look, I have the power at my disposal to act honestly and with courage, knowing that what God thinks of me is the most important thing. You see, because I've got my identity not in what other people may think of me, I have my identity in God. Not just in his resources, but in what he thinks of me and what he knows. He knows the desires of my heart better than I know them myself. And he knows what I want and what I need. I remember that Drew, I was thinking back to one of your preachers actually, and I did remember some of them. And when it comes to giving you, I'm on a slight diversion here, when it comes to giving the desires of your heart, God doesn't necessarily always give you what you want, because it would be like giving you a small child a knife. Do you remember? Like giving you a small child. So he gives you the desires of your heart. He'll give you and impart upon you what he knows that you want. And God really knows you intimately, and I gain my identity now, or try to, from him and draw upon his resources. So our walk is characterized by our responses of what God has already done. We can't add or take away from that. Our response must be to start making choices from our newly created spirit rather than from our old way of thinking. And we are constantly faced with choices to satisfy our outer natural desires, as the Bible puts it, or to submit to God's spirit. You know, we need to take hold of this gift of being a new creation. It's not something we just need to be very British about and very passive. We need to take hold of this gift. I certainly need to take this off because I'm getting a bit hot. And you know, success is really important to me. As I didn't do very well at school, I've got a list in my mind, or I did have, and I still have to some extent, of things that I need to overcome. I sorted sport out, and the next thing was qualifications. And I got myself a PhD, so some may say I went a bit over the top there. But you know, that whole approach is absolutely toxic. Drawing on my own resources, gaining my own identity in my strength and in what other people said. Ah, he's a PhD, Dr. Cook. Come on in, Dr. Cook. God, I tell you, when somebody says that and you've struggled away to get a PhD, you feel good about it. You feel good. But you know, that will all come to nothing. That will all come to nothing in the end, won't it? Because all I will be is standing there in front of God. And it will be about what he has declared over me, not what I have achieved in the world, albeit with God-given materials and basic natural gifts. But fundamentally, when I stand there, I will not be Dr. Cook. I will be Matthew Cook. I may not even be that. I don't know how that'll work. But he'll say, adopted son, good and faithful servant, I hope, you're coming home. So a sense of getting my identity, and you know, that's been a struggle, you know. I'm not saying to you, giving you some perfect line of how this has worked out, because this is an ongoing thing. This is not something which I've sorted out. It's not something which I can say to you, it's great, we can move on from this point, because we can't. And I'm still having a battle with it, because you know, I've been successful in the world, and I could have financially been a lot more successful. But I've made choices which have meant that I've turned away from some of that stuff, and that's been hard. And it's been hard to give things over to God. And I was saying to my small group the other day, I was still giving things over. Help me give things over. And some of you may know that Mark Adams and I spend time regularly running together. And we run around various fields and bits of woodland just north of Clapham at breakneck, pace. In fact, we even wear head torches so we can go running in the dark. I'm sure the police probably think the aliens have landed. And we keep asking PJ to come with us, but he's not really up for it. Busy. We love running, and we're really very competitive. We run up what we call the Hill of Difficulty. And the Hill of Difficulty goes up by the side of Clapham Caravan Park. And just when I get to the top, you know, the top is the hardest point. Just as you're going just towards the summit, you should always run over the top, run away from a hill. And I say, I generally ask Mark an open question, just while he's really gasping for air. Or he'll ask me a really open question, which means a really long sort of answer. And we're terribly competitive. And I get home and I get in the bath and I can't get out again. And I go downstairs and I get in front of the television. Kirsty asks me a question. I just say, that's all I've got to offer. And then I say, don't tell Sarah, because Mark will find out how hard that was. But you know what? Mark and I, our runs are really important. They're very important, far beyond the physical. Mark and I have got to know each other really well. And we've been on a journey together. And when I think about it now, it makes me all emotional. I'm sure when you spoke to him, he would feel similarly. A journey in which we've helped each other hand things over to God. You see, now I can ask Mark nearly any question. And he's a black belt in Taekwondo, so sometimes it makes me wince a bit. I wonder what's going to happen. But I can ask him anything. I can ask Mark anything, and he can ask me anything. And truly accountable to each other. I have a running buddy where we can run round and we can say, how's it going? How's it going on these issues? And we're together, both of us. And I've spoken to him and agreed, and I can tell you this, that we're both handing things over to God. We're both handing things over, realizing what it is to be a new creation, letting God do the things for us rather than us doing things ourselves and us gaining an identity through the successes that we may enjoy. I have a question, and that is, who are you running with? Who's your running buddy on these issues? You are a new creation, but as you step out into it, who are you stepping out with? Is it in your small group? Is it in your friendships? Is it with your partner, your wife, your husband? For blokes, who are you running with, and are you open and honest with each other? Or do you deploy diversion tactics? I think blokes are absolutely excellent at it. You say, so how are you doing? I'm doing great. And the other day, I was watching the football, and they're doing well, aren't they? And then we go on and on, and we're diverted, and we're off onto something. Isn't it great what God's doing for you? Yeah, Arsenal scored. The point is, are you really revealing yourself to each other, or are you not getting, are you getting beyond the surface? And for girls as well, are you just having a chit-chat? And I know chit-chat's good. I learned that from Kirsty. Chit-chat's good, makes you feel good, makes you regenerated, chance for you to share. But are your conversations deep? Are they about the things that really matter? Are you really revealing yourself to each other? You know, as I've recognised God's power in me, the power that he deposited in me when I gave my life to him all those years ago, 1978, I'm learning what it is to be a conqueror. Or rather, to walk out in what he's conquered for me. He's overcome. It is not about me trying harder or seeking success in the various things I do in life or satisfaction in even the relationship I have with others. It is about recognizing that my Heavenly Father has placed in me all that I need to follow him wholeheartedly and experience his grace working in me daily, propelling me towards a life of greater purity and humility and increasing my passion for him all the time. The more I seek him, the more he increases my desire for him. The more I want to spend time with him. The more time I spend with him, the more I feel convicted of my sin. And the more aware of his grace I become. The more aware of his grace I become, the more my desire not to sin increases, and so on and so on. It's a wonderful and exciting journey. You know, there's no need for any of us here today who know Jesus to live with things in our lives that we feel cannot be changed, or characteristics and behaviour patterns we feel controlled by. I'm certainly not up for doing that myself. You want to know, if you're going to forget, you know, if you want to remember one thing from this, I am not up for living as I lived before I was a new creation. I'm up for living as a new creation. There is no need for me to live in poverty, and there is no need for you similarly to do so. The simple biblical truth is that we are no longer slaves to anything except the Lordship of Jesus Christ. Romans 6 verse 14 tells us that. And we have to do what we have to do is to submit ourselves to him, and the new spirit within us will do the rest. And some of you here today may say that you're not following Jesus. Well, something has drawn you here. It may be that God is prompting you on some of the issues that Kirsty and I have been talking to you about. Perhaps you come for a while and thought, I'd like some of this. You know, my old house group leader at Bromham, Michael O'Rourke, said, you know, Matt, being a Christian is much harder than being nice to old ladies and small dogs. Being a Christian is much harder than being nice to old ladies and small dogs. A self-help book, Learn Behaviours, will not do the job. It will not tell you how to be a Christian. Rather, God does everything by making us a new creation. Someone with a new identity and someone with options. Options you didn't have before. So how are you living? How are you living out? For Christians, are you living as new creations? You are a new creation. Have you really grasped hold of that? Are you expecting more of God when you have all you need with respect to becoming a new creation? And who are you running with and gaining support on these issues?